Liberty News, taking the lock on the shackles of tyranny.
Machines are going to fail, and the system's going to fail.
The past is past, the future's now.
Don't look at me. I think these people are completely nuts.
Sometimes trouble just follows a man.
There is another organism on this planet that follows the same pattern. You know what it is? A virus.
Can't you stop your lips from flapping for 2 little minutes?
Because I'm white. I'm a man. I'm sensitive. I need to feel loved. I need to be desired.
Yeah, I'm rapping and becoming a big underground succession.
It's a question of methods. Everybody wants results, but nobody wants to do what they have to do to get them done.
And now, coming to you live from Kalispell, Montana, brought to you by Northwest Liberty News, it's Montana Gazette Radio with your host, James White. Okay, I'm your host, James White. This is Montana Gazette Radio. Thanks so much for joining me here today on the broadcast on this ninth day of April 2021. We're coming to you live here from Kalispell, Montana. Thanks so much for joining us here on the show. We have returning guest Ron Gibson will be joining us here in just a moment. I'll bring Ron on to the line. But before I do so, let me give Ron a brief introduction. And Ron is a former U.S. Marine and Vietnam veteran who currently works as a professional consultant, counselor at law with over 48 years of experience on the subject of land patents, mining law, right-of-way, contracts, water rights, and constitutional law. Raised on a ranch in Southern Oregon, his education is engineering and constitutional law. Having a cattle, ranching, and mineral background has helped him to tackle many of the issues facing rural America today. Ron has several gold and industrial mineral projects in the western U.S., and he currently serves as the vice president of the Southwest Oregon Mining Association and as the chairman of the Jefferson Mining District located in Southern Oregon. A licensed pilot, Ron has designed a helicopter and is the inventor of two environmental cleanup products. Additionally, he's also involved in turbine engines, marine powerboat plants, and turbine propulsion projects for helicopters and airplanes. His love of history and lifelong experience in cattle and horses has also served him well in his land, hay, alfalfa, and high-quality beef operations. In his spare time, Ron enjoys collectible auto restorations, raising quarter horses and paint horses, flying and teaching classes on constitutional law, mining law, and land patents. As I said, he's been on the broadcast numerous times. Great friend of the show. Ron Gibson, thanks so much for joining us here once again on Montana Gazette Radio.
Well, good morning, Jim. How you doing?
Doing well, Ron. Good morning to you, too. Thanks, sir. Appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to come here on the show. It's always great to have you. And we continue to march forward, guys like you and I, trying to, expose the fraud that we're really living under, in many areas of our lives, in their day-to-day lives. Certainly, the government and what they do is to be considered fraudulent and on many fronts, and that's kind of the things we try to expose here, Ron. And I know you spent, I think, 48 years now, I believe, as a constitutional lawyer, trying to expose what the truth is really to the folks. And we certainly, we applaud your efforts and our hats are off to you, Ron, and the great work that you do. Thanks so much.
Well, thank you, Jim. You know, it's always an honor to be on your program because you and I and many others have a like desire to preserve our liberty and our freedoms and our constitutional values. And it appears that because the people will not stand up and will not speak up, we're on the fringe of potentially losing that. And the tragedy about that is the fact that once you lose your liberty and your rights, it's almost impossible to get them back. So I have, for at least the last 35 years, have been screaming from the rooftops of people to open their eyes and see what is happening around us. And one of the big issues that we have in our country, and just going to cover a few of the items of that. And that is the fact that we're losing a tremendous amount of our land for the purpose of productivity and agriculture and whatever. I read a report here, it's been several years back, that we're losing about 1,100 acres a day for the last 30, 35 years, being withdrawn lands, have been issues of commercial development, highways, et cetera, et cetera. And I remember when I was in high school, in 1965, the government had 2.5 years worth of food surplus of grains and wheats and whatever all was involved in that. And I read another report in 2000, which is 21 years ago, and our food reserve was 39 days. You can't grow a garden in 39 days, folks. And we're going to wake up one day and not have much to eat, if anything to eat. And then things are going to get real ugly. And I'm not here to portray doom and gloom. But I am given a call to urgency that we need to pay attention to what's going on. And this current administration that we're dealing with here has lost their ever-loving mind in all sense of direction. And sometimes that stuff has long-lasting effect. And I hope that the people, after seeing what's happened in this last election, presidential election, that would realize in its full force and effect the tremendous corruption that is involved in all segments of government, not just at the federal level, but it's throughout. And now we're being dictated to by large corporations that for all intents and purposes are running this country. And those types of situation is always self-seeking. In other words, you and I, they used to have a saying in the Marine Corps, this is an issue of mind over matter. And they would say, we don't mind and you don't matter. And that's exactly what we're facing here today. So I just hope that your listening audience will take heed and stand up and speak up. It's amazing the power that we have, and but that power is sitting idle, as from all appearances at this point. Now, don't misunderstand me. There are a lot of groups out there that are formulating and kind of getting their feet under him for them for addressing the very things that I'm talking about. But by the same token, we need a whole lot more, because with people or power, and the larger number of people that get involved, the more power we have. So that's kind of my introduction for today's discussion.
Well, Ron, if we can, let's kick it off here first with, I want you to explain something here to the folks and to those that will be listening after we upload this video to Rumble, after we process this video and upload it. Here's the question to you, Ron. Recently, President Joe Biden signed an executive order really demonizing, you know, lawful gun owners with the stroke of a pen. Can you break down the real facts about an executive order and how anytime a president or a governor issues an executive order, it's not designed lawfully to have any effect on the citizens? This is what kings do, and we're not run by a king. They can't just make proclamations, sweeping proclamations that violate our rights with the stroke of a pen. I mean, we fought a war to prevent that from happening. Can you explain really, Ron, what executive orders are, what they're designed for, and why they do not have any effect? They're not supposed to have any effect on the everyday citizen.
Well, you know, Jim, you bring up a very important question there, and I thank you for asking the question, because I have addressed this issue in a number of my speaking engagements about the issue of executive order and all the related facets to that. Let's go back, if I may, to the creation of our country. To the creation of our country. Our government was created by we the people. Government didn't create the people. And we the people are the ones of the creation and the makers of law. We have representatives now for a constitutional republic of having representatives to make the laws that we desire for them to make. Now, I want you folks to follow me very carefully here, because it'll show you how much over the cliff our government has fallen. The initial purpose of government was to protect the people's rights and property. And in and with that proclamation about the mandate and the power that we gave government is very, very limited. I mean, very limited. And within our elected officials, the president was given the power of which to issue what's called, as Jim mentioned, an executive order. An executive order was designed for the specific purpose of giving his immediate cabinet day-to-day directions or every other day or whatever the need was to carry out the business of the government on a daily basis. It was never, ever designed to be far-reaching outside of his immediate cabinet that affect your and I's rights. It's like the closure and the stoppage of the pipeline there. The president has no authority to stop that pipeline because that's a contract and it's paid for in part, and I don't know exactly the number, but by Canada. And that contract, the Constitution gives us the right of contract. And also in Article 1, Section 10, Clause 1, the contract cannot be impaired by a third party. The president didn't sign that document. And the point that I'm making is that there is money that goes toward it, but that contract cannot be circumvented, unlike the thing. And I want to go back to another issue, too. I've been to Washington, D.C., and I've gone through a lot of the archive booklets and the rules and the regulations and all of that. And one of the things that I want to mention to you folks is that the issue of an election or law, and especially addressing the issue of laws, it is to be initiated in the House and then the Senate. The original purpose of the Senate was for the purpose of reviewing the proposed bill that to be voted on up or down by Congress, to make sure that that proposed bill did not interfere with any of our constitutional protected rights. And so now you got the House making a bill and you got Senate making a bill and whatever. But to go back to the original design of our government, once the House passed a bill and it went to the Senate and the Senate reviewed it, their responsibility is to make sure that your and I's rights were totally protected constitutionally. At that point, that bill was to go to the people, we the people, the first three words in our Constitution, and we were to vote on that. That gave the United States government of we the people created for the purpose that it had then authority to go to the president's desk for signature. Now, how many bills and laws have you and I got to vote on in our lifetime? Absolutely none. They have commandeered, I guess, if I can pronounce that correctly, our authority and jurisdiction of which to tell government what it is and it can and cannot do. And now they act as though they come up with all of these bills and we're supposed to swallow that hook, line, and sinker. I'm telling you, folks, things are out in the ditch here. And so when you look at that aspect of it, piece by piece, they diminish our rights and the protective covenants on our rights. And I could go on and on. There's so many things that are asked backwards, if I can put it in that context. But the getting back to your fundamental question, that executive order cannot extend by law to you and I, the sovereigns. And folks, make no mistake about it, we're sovereign. We're Americans, and we're sovereign by creation of Almighty God. And sovereigns are not subject to law. And I want that not to be understood. But sovereigns are the creators of law because we're the creator of government. And we've lost sight of that. We've been so indoctrinated to think that we're nothing but slaves, and we've been acting like slaves. And boy, that troubles me to the very depths of my soul, because we're not slaves unless you choose to be a slave. There's a very famous case called City of Dallas versus Mitchell. And in that case, the court stated the facts very, very clearly. And said our rights don't come from government. They come from our Creator. And we are not subject to government laws and rules and regulations unless we volunteer to be subject to that. Now, does that mean we can go out and do anything we want and hurt our neighbor? That's not what it's talking about. We have a moral responsibility to do what's right and to help the neighbor, not prey upon the neighbor. And on it goes. So. But that's kind of it in a nutshell. That executive order is so abused by the presidency and also by the governors of each one of the states. Now, some governors are very respectful of that issue because I think that from what I can determine, they understand the purpose of that. But the executive order is to give daily instructions to his immediate cabinet to carry out the function of government on a daily basis, not to infringe penalties or restrictions upon you and I, that being we the people. So
yeah, you know,
that's it in a nutshell.
You know, it always puzzled me how how I think it was in New Jersey, this guy that owned his gym is a private business. You know, if he purchased it's just a private business. It's his own business that he owned. The governor of New Jersey came in, if you remember that story, and kept trying to close this guy's doors. They bust doors down at a certain point. He actually had the local person that was running for office there turn it into a political campaign headquarters, and they couldn't do anything for a while until the election got over. But they're still coming after this guy, finding them like $15,000 a day or something ridiculous that they're doing here. They have no power to do any of that stuff, do they, Ron? They can't do any of it. The governor can't come in and tell you how to run your private business. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, and you're absolutely right. I just finished, day before yesterday, a six-page law brief having to do with the intrusion of a county into private property. And there are numerous cases, and I'll just mention a few of them. And in those cases, it's Monterey versus Del Monte Zune, Pizzaglio versus Rhode Island, Lucas versus South Carolina Coastal Commission, and Summa Corporation versus State of California, and it, on and on and on it goes. But the point being is that these municipalities or counties or even the state has no authority to infringe upon any rule, regulation, upon the private property owner. Now, here's where the caveat issue comes into play. I want to back up a little bit, and I'm doing a little bit of a sidebar, but please hang with me. Years ago, when the patents were issued, that's the true title to land. They're called land patents. And those land patents are allodial. All of them, every single one of them, are allodial title. And allodial means owing to no one to no lord nor superior. In other words, when you got the patent, whether you were the first grantee or you were a purchaser of that land down the line, you still maintained and had all of the rights that went with that first conveyance to the private sector. Well, as a result of that, then in essence, you had to take that document to fulfill the obligation of the patent law to the county recorder's office to get it recorded. The Administrative Procedures Act came into play in June 11, 1946, I believe it is. The next guy that came into the county recorder's office, they took that patent, because every buyer and seller, or seller and buyer, before that period of time, when you bought the piece of property or acquired it by whatever means, you got that original patent. You were holding it in your hand. And so when this Administrative Procedures Act came into play, is that's what we call our government today. It falls under that unlawful jurisdiction. Congress had no authority to do that by any means constitutionally, but they did it. And the people never put a stop to it, and here we are. But anyway, they took that document in after the Administrative Procedures Act was passed, and the county recorder's office took that patent title. They did not give it back. Instead, they issued what's called a warranty deed. And a warranty deed is not a title. You challenge any and all of you listening here this morning. Go look at your warranty deed, and you will see that you are listed as a tenant or tenant in common. Now, a warranty deed only acknowledges an equity interest in a piece of property, and it also allows you the right of possession, but absolutely no right of ownership. So then to gain jurisdiction over that, then the state and the county and all of the cohorts that were involved in this fraud, they then redefined land. All land and land transactions were called land. Now they redefined it after the Administrative Procedures Act and redefined it to read real estate. What does real estate mean? It means that it's real, and the estate means that the state owns it, because they were holding now the patent that belonged to the private sector. They have no authority nor jurisdiction or any means of which to hold that patent, let alone to steal it, to get it. And that's what they did. So here we are now dealing with all of the land use regulations and OSHA coming in and fining people on that. They have no authority to do that at all. Absolutely none. And this fining people on this coronavirus issue, boy, there's so many holes in that bucket I can't even tell you. Go ahead, Jim.
Well, let me just pose this to you, Ron. For example, if you want to operate a food stand in a city, they require you to get a food license or a license to be able to serve food, right, for the health department or whatever it is. Once you, to be able to operate, you can't get it. You can't operate technically without it. But then once you get it, then you have volunteered to be into that system, because now you have to, you fall under the auspices of that licensure, and then you can't, at that point, they've got you, because they go in and go, well, hey, listen, you've got a license here. We're just going to remove your license to serve food. Then if you try doing that, then we're going to send the cops in and close you down, because now you're, who knows, whatever they're going to make up. So, I mean, it's almost like they got it rigged. It's like rigged where you can't win. They have the upper hand, it seems, because to operate in some of these places, you have to sign these, you know, you got to get licenses, right, to operate. You know what I'm talking about. They leave you no choice, or they'll shut you down or send the cops in.
Well, Jim, you're absolutely right, and it is rigged. And I tell people in a lot of my speaking engagements and my patent seminars, et cetera, that all we have to do collectively as sovereign people is to say no. because they don't have authority. And I can prove it in law. I can prove it over and over and over and over. Let me give you an example for your listeners, if I may. There's a very famous case called Summa Corporation versus State of California, 1984 case. And in that, the state of California, which has a lot of power, all states have a lot of power, but they went after Summa Corporation's land west of Los Angeles all the way to the beach to make it access so that the public have beach access. And Summa Corporation said, no, that's private land. And so they went to court, and the Superior Court of California heard the case, ruled against Summa. They appealed it to the California Appeals Court. They ruled against Summa, and it went to the Supreme Court of California. They ruled against them. So they went to the Federal District Court. The Federal District Court ruled against Summa. They went to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, and the Ninth Circuit Court ruled against them. So they petitioned the United States Supreme Court. And because it's a patent issue, the Supreme Court has to take those cases because they're an Article III court. So what they ended up doing, they end up in the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court blistered, literally blistered the state of California on numerous issues. They violated treaty law. Land patents are protected by treaty. The very fact that they were infringing upon the grant by the Guadalupe Hidalgo Treaty between Mexico and the United States, those cannot be altered. They can't be changed, nothing. But they also address the issue of what's called privity. Privity means lawful standing to intervene in a court case as a third party. Remember me sharing with you some months back, when a patent is issued, it is a forever contract between the United States government and the grantee or their heirs or assigns forever. Don't miss that word forever, because it's very significant. And getting back to the case, and the Supreme Court also blistered the state and told them that unless they were named on the original patent, they could make no claim toward that property. And that was what I was sharing with you folks a little while ago on Monterey versus Del Monte Dunes and Pazzaglio versus Rhode Island and Lucas versus South Carolina Coastal Commission, and on it goes. The government agencies or entity has to own the property to have jurisdiction over it. And that's this six-page legal brief that I did here day before yesterday to some people that the county's coming after them. And the guy rebuilds old cars and does a miraculous job. In fact, two of his vehicles has been sold on Barrett Jackson's auctions there. That is one of the highest profile auctions in the nation. And when you look at the stuff that he's got around his shop and in the back, you think, my God, what a junk pile, piece of junk in that stuff. And I've known the man for about 22 years. And when the county started harassing him on nuisance basis and claiming that he got people living in this and that, and I said, bullshit. There's absolutely no authority to it. So anyway, make a long story short, I wrote a six-page law brief on the basis of why they can't do what they're doing. So anyway,
right.
Go ahead.
I tell you what we're going to do, Ron. We're going to take a quick commercial break here. When we get back on the other side, we're going to talk about breach of fiduciary trust. This is something that we have touched before on the program, but it's very, very important. It's a very important issue that we need to, you know, bring back once again into the spotlight, because it's a pretty apparent from hearing, you know, from hearing you talk about it before, that it's an absolute breach of fiduciary trust here with these elected servants that we have, that are supposed to be doing the will of the people, but they've failed miserably with that. Ron, I've got your information now on the screen here, but I'm going to give it out for those people on the listening side of things and aren't watching the video. You can email Ron at DRITECRG@hotmail.com. That's DRITECRG@hotmail.com. Or you can call Ron directly at 541-621-5548. 541-621-5548. And Ron has helped many people that have been listeners of this broadcast over the years. He's helped a lot of people here right around the Flathead Valley with their helping them get their land patents. So he's the real deal that really knows the law, and we always appreciate him being on the show. Ron, do you mind sticking around here after the break, and then we can go into the breach of fiduciary trust?
You bet. I'll be here.
Very good. We're going to put you on hold. I'm going to spin up these commercials here, and I'll be back with you after these brief messages. Folks, we're going to take a quick commercial break. I'm your host, James White, MontanaGazetteRadio.com, MontanaGazetteRadio.com, and you can watch the show or listen to the show live there now on MontanaGazetteRadio.com. It pipes in here with the Blog Talk link. You can go to MontanaDailyGazette.com for the number one news broadcast, the number one, I should say, news website here in Montana, where you can always go to the flagship Northwest Liberty News, where this show is broadcast live as well through Blog Talk on that page also. Appreciate you looking in. We'll be back after these brief messages. I'm your host, James White, Montana Gazette Radio. If you like classic cars, exceptional service, and a money-back guarantee, then the Corner Shop in beautiful downtown Kalispell is the place for you. Whether it's an oil change, engine diagnostic, suspension work, or brakes all around, the Corner Shop has you covered. With expert technicians and a free consultation on all services, you can't go wrong with the Corner Shop. Did I mention the classic cars? While you're waiting for your expert service to be performed, take a stroll through the showroom to see Kalispell's smoothest collection of classic cars. The Corner Shop is conveniently located at 1212 South Main, just south of the courthouse. The Corner Shop is open Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. till 5 p.m., so drop by for an appointment or call 755-7777. That's 755-7777. The Corner Shop, Kalispell's full-service auto repair facility. Hi, this video is brought to you by PatriotPrepared.com, where right now you can save $250 on each large package purchase, plus get free shipping to the continental United States. In these troubled times, it's not a bad idea to have some extra food storage available, and you can save big at Patriot Prepared right now. Go to PatriotPrepared.com, that's PatriotPrepared.com, and use the code TRUMP250 at checkout to receive your savings today. Okay, thanks for hanging out at the break. I'm your host, James White. This is Montana Gazette Radio, and you want to support the show, you can support us by supporting our advertisers. If you are in Kalispell and you're looking for car repair, visit the fine folks over at the Corner Shop. Dan Korn and his great staff over there will be happy to help you out. And you can call them or visit and just drop right in. If you haven't had if you don't have storable food, if you're not all hooked up with that yet, or seeds, storable food, seeds, or water filtration, now's the time to do that. You can go right to PatriotPrepared.com. It's PatriotPrepared.com. And you can save big there right now. And we do always appreciate your support. If you just want to support us directly, you can go to NorthwestLibertyNews.com and click on the support independent news. And we are supported by you, the listeners. And we do, of course, again, appreciate your support and spread the video around and help getting the word out. We do thank you for that. Okay, we're going to bring Ron back on the line here. Constitutional lawyer, been on my show probably more than anybody else, I think, before has ever been on the show. Ron Gibson is probably my number one guest as far as appearances are concerned, for sure. His video series that we have on the YouTube channel there is legendary. It's called The Truth Will Set You Free. Now, I just got off a suspension. I just want to make a note. I just got off the suspension from my main Northwest Liberty News channel after 2 weeks being suspended. I was suspended for a week. I was on for a day, and they immediately hit me with another strike and suspended me for 2 weeks. And if I get into one more strike, they're going to cancel my channel completely. So that is probably the path that they're going to be heading down here, is they're going to be canceling Northwest Liberty News, and they're going to be taking down those videos of Ron and all this work that we've done. Thankfully, I have that stuff all backed up, and I have a Rumble channel. Haven't had a chance to upload all that stuff to Rumble yet, but I'm going to get Ron's stuff up there for sure. And we're going to continue to march forward despite the censorship. We're just going to kind of continue to get the truth out, folks, because we're at the, you know, this is the battle for everything. We've reached that crossroads. We're either going to defeat this tyranny and live in a world, you know, of personal freedoms and liberty, or we're going to have a deep, dark tyranny like we've never experienced before, you know, in our lifetimes. So we're really at that point, and it's up to us which direction we go in. It really is. It's always been up to us. And it's time to stand up and get in the battle. Ron Gibson, thanks so much for hanging on after the break. I do appreciate that. DRITECRG@hotmail.com. DRITECRG@hotmail.com. Or 541-621-5548 to get a hold of the one and only Ron Gibson. Ron, thanks so much for hanging out after the break. It's always great to have you here. Appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Jim.
Okay, let's cover the breach of fiduciary trust, because this is something that is pretty much, I think, just about every public official that I can think of, public official, public servant. We probably need to stop calling these people public officials, because there's really nothing official about them except they're officially supposed to represent us, which they don't do, sadly. So they fail in their official responsibilities, that's for sure. And they also breach fiduciary trust. So why don't you go ahead and tell us about fiduciary trust, Ron, and why is it important for us to know about it, and what can we do to sort of, you know, get them to operate properly and to not breach our fiduciary trust? Over to you, Ron.
Well, first of all, Jim, let me say to your listening audience here, this issue of fiduciary duty and fiduciary trust is such an important issue that 99% of people don't have a clue what it means. They don't know how to address it. And unfortunately, there are many who don't care. But what a public officer is a fiduciary trust agent. In other words, they have a fiduciary means moral, legal, and ethical obligation of which to do their job or their duty within the confines that is laid out by we the people for the benefit of we the people. And what we have now, for the most part, is public servants, supposedly public servants, who should be public servants, aiding and abetting the benefit of the state. And that is never what that was intended for them to do. And that's called a breach of fiduciary duty. In other words, they're for all intents and purposes, involved in criminal activity because they have no authority to do it. The Constitution is very specific about our public servants. And what we end up with now is an absolute criminal syndicate, and I'm going to call it what it is. And I get people angry at me, well, how dare you call it that? And the reason I do, because that's what it is, the activity. And look what's happening in our government entities across the nation. So if anyone would now deny that that involved in a criminal syndicate, they haven't got their eyes open. But let me give you a very prime example. The sheriff's position is one of the most critical elected officials that we can possibly have across this great land. The sheriff's position is a constitutional issue. We elect him constitutionally, but he's put in office by our vote. Okay? And with that vote comes the responsibility of which he is to protect us from criminals and from lawbreakers and from unlawful court action and from unlawful state legislation. And as a result of that, he gets elected and he takes office, he puts his hand on the Bible, and he holds his hand up and he swears to uphold the Constitution and to protect us from enemies both foreign and abroad. Well, here's what happens. When he gets elected, the day that he's elected, he puts on a constitutional hat, if I can put it in that context. And once he gives his oath there, then the very next morning, he takes that constitutional hat off and he puts on an administrative hat and he goes and he gets a writ of assistance from the court unlawfully. The court can't issue a writ of assistance in reference to private property to start with. And the second thing is the sheriff has now breached his constitutional fiduciary duty because now he goes out, they get in a patrol cars, they take 100 people with them of sheriff deputies, and they surround this house and they kick people out of their home, of their private property. There's no constitutional provision for that anywhere, absolutely nowhere, because the sheriff's position is for the purpose of being our protective firewall against the things that I just mentioned about unlawful court action, because the courts are criminal as well, probably some of the worst of the criminals out there.
Let me stop it for a second here, and I'm just, you know, I'll bring up the opposing viewpoint. What legal action do we have? Let's say if we have a contract to sell a piece of land to someone and then they renege on it and they decide not to pay or otherwise, you know, if they violate their end of the contract, there's got to be some sort of a legal remedy. We can't just let people operate that way. So how do we, Jim, go ahead.
No, that's a good question. But you got to look at the whole picture. You're only looking at one part of it. And I don't say that in a derogatory sense at all.
No, you're good.
First of all, the loan that they supposedly made to the buyer of the home never made a loan. So therefore, if no loan, then there is no liability. There's no obligation. And that's the part of this equation that nobody ever goes, or I say nobody, very few, try to help them to understand. Your remedy is to challenge the loan, and that the sheriff should never, ever intervene into that thing until that issue is addressed. But they got to let the sheriff know. But there is no loan that's made.
How do you buy and sell properties? I mean, I guess I'm a little bit puzzled. Let's say you have a piece of property that I want to purchase, and then we get in a contract to say, okay, you're going to buy this patch for $10,000 and you're going to pay me $1,000 a month for 10 months. And then it's going to be paid for. And then after month six, I say, yeah, I'm not paying you anymore. I don't think it's really worth that overall. And then, you know, what happens? How do you get made whole? How do you get the money that's owed to you? There's got to be a provision for that, or everything breaks down and we'd have just anarchy everywhere.
Well, no, you don't. You don't have that, because what you do is you seek a lender that actually loans you the money to buy the property. By what we're doing, we're aiding and abetting the criminal activity of the fraud against every purchaser of a home. That's what we're missing here, simply because unless there is a loan made, like I said a little earlier, there is no obligation. Because the banks, they portray, that's part of the fraud. They commit all kinds of fraud. The first 4 days of any purchase of a home, the banks or financial company, mortgage company, whatever you want to call it, has committed four frauds within 4 days. And so we have to decide. Go ahead.
But I guess that gets back to my point, Ron. Is the only lawful thing just a contract between two individuals that you say, okay, I mean, I guess I'm a little bit puzzled by, if you have an agreement with somebody to pay off a certain amount of money to buy a piece of property or a home, and then you stop and you don't perform your side of the contract. You can't just say, oh, well, the whole thing was scam. Sorry, you lose, buddy. You don't get your other $4,000 or whatever it is. There's got to be some way to remedy that, Ron, legally, lawfully, I should say.
Well, first of all, I go back to the very premise that I said to start with. If somebody actually loaned you the money to buy that, and I'm talking about money, I'm not talking about, you know, digital numbers, because that's not money. And that's been proven in the courts over and over and over. But on that basis, then you have an obligation. If you have got your patent brought forward, they cannot take that property in lieu of the remainder balance of it. That's unlawful. There's no provision. It violates the intent of Congress, and I could go down the list. But if there's an actual loan that you made, and let's just take a private finance company or whatever on the thing that actually writes a check there and gets to the title company, pays off the seller, now you have an obligation because they put something in. When you have a fraud committed like the mortgage companies do on the thing, then in essence there's no money that's ever lent. Now, there's an element of law, and if you look in my patent book that I wrote, you'll see from about page 92 to 100, I address this issue. And the court has an option. They cannot come and take the property, but they can issue a constructive trust judgment. And that constructive trust judgment then is for the benefit of the lender. But the lender has to be a true lender. Then he can order that the owner of the property makes payments, whatever. Now, here's the plus side on one sense for the property owner. If he's in trouble financially on the thing, then he determines how much money he makes on a monthly payment or whatever arrangements that are agreed upon. Now, of course, the person loaning the money, they don't like that, but by the same token, they're assured that they're going to get the money. So that's how that program is supposed to work. So if you're on, let's say you had a $1,000 a month payment, you couldn't make it, but you can make a $250 a month payment. That person who owns that property had better keep up on that, because if not, the bank or the court then will sanction you, and that creates a whole lot of other problem. But the object of that, for the intent of Congress, they cannot come and take the man's land. There's no provision for that because it's a lodial title. They can't even put a lien against it. But they can have a legal action against the individual. But there's no provision in law to come and take your land under a land patent.
None. So if you have a land patent on your property, it doesn't really cover the structure so much as it does the land itself, from what I'm understanding.
That is correct. That is what it's all predicated upon, is the land. The structure is just an element that sits on the land, like you just said. That's correct.
So if you have your land patent, you can really, then you don't have to actually go to the city and ask permission to put new windows in your house or to put an addition on your property or S things, right? I mean, have you broken yourself out of that jurisdiction at that point when you get your land patent title brought forth, your lodial title? Are you no longer subject to the rules and regulations of the zoning commission and all these other government agencies that were created to just siphon money from us, really?
That's absolutely correct. You have a right to do with your land. There's only one provision in law that the state can come and intervene, and that's under what each state has. It's called the police power. And the police power is that if they find out or see that you're doing something that is a direct threat, not a hypothetical threat, but a direct threat to public health, safety, and welfare, then the state, under their police power, can come in and say, hey, you got to stop what you're doing, or if you don't, they'll put a stop to it. They have every right to do that because we, the people, may be at risk. Other than that, they have no lawful authority to do anything on that. And that's what I was sharing with these court cases earlier. For them to have jurisdiction, they have to own the property. The United States Supreme Court has ruled on that so many times, I can't even count it. but yet they come along and act like they own the land because they think they do, because they commandeered and stole the patents way back when.
So you have a land patent on your property and you want to pour a new cement driveway. You are not obligated to go and get license, get the permits for that and get all the jump through all the hoops and all the stuff that's necessary for that. You just go ahead and put your driveway. It doesn't fall under
that. That is correct.
You're not harming. No one is in direct danger of being harmed by you pouring your driveway at that point. So that means they have no power to try to stop you. All right?
That is correct. That's what these court cases emphasize, and they're very clear in the rulings of the Supreme Court. And I might mention these Supreme Court cases have never been overturned. Every judge in the land that's not a part of the Supreme Court is bound by those rulings. But we don't remind the judges of those rulings.
You know, something I found out, Ron, that's a little bit troubling to me, is a lot of the judicial, a lot of the people that are, you know, a lot of judges, a lot of people in the judicial branch or the judicial community are involved in real estate investment trusts, the REIT, the real estate investment trust. There's like a trust out there for real estate investment. So I think there's a little bit of a double standard there, not double standard, but a conflict of interest, because I don't know if they ever turn away a foreclosure. They almost always go along with the bank on a foreclosure, even maybe when it's not necessarily the right thing to do. Have you heard of that, Ron, as well, a lot of judges are tied into the real estate, sort of their pensions and everything are tied to these real estate trusts, and it behooves them to carry out these foreclosures? Is that anything that's come across your radar?
Absolutely. And you hit a nail right on the head there. They have found that many of the judges across the land have a partnership or an ownership or the beneficiary of a real estate trust. They get benefits and payments from or ownership of the land by ruling against the people who rightfully have a right to own and possess the land. And I keep telling people it's criminal. And it is criminal because there's so much stuff that goes on behind the scene that you and I don't know about. Originally, judges got 5% of every judgment. No wonder they're ruling against we the people. And then I heard the other day that that's been up to 15%. Now, I don't know that for a fact because I have not been able to validate it yet. But I do know that they were getting 5% for their little unknown retirement box back here in the back room, so to speak. So when you have immoral people in positions of power or leadership, then in essence, it's going to get ugly. There is a scripture in my Bible that says, never was a lion so vicious as an ungodly man with power. And boy, is that ever true. But
yeah,
we the people, Jim, I keep coming back to this, and maybe I see something the rest of the world doesn't, but we better start standing up. On this fiduciary duty issue, every time that they do you wrong, you file an official complaint, not only with their boss, but with the state attorney general's office. And when we start bombarding them with this, I guarantee you something's going to happen. I have seen it work over and over and over and over. Person does it, they just look at it and throw it in the trash. 50 people or 100 people do it, now they got to start paying attention because it's a power and a force they're going to have to deal with, because that power and force has tremendous power and authority over them if we the people do our due diligence, and we're not doing it. It's that simple.
No, we're not. Before we're just winding down. This the time goes by so fast, Ron. Before we wind down here, we've only got a couple of minutes left here before the show's over. Give us some give the folks out there. You know, I know you spent years and years studying, you know, this system to learn the ins and outs and you know the criminal element you know, that, that is operating it really. What can the average person out there listening to this broadcast, what can they do? You know, those form emails, those are no good because they know those are just, you know, manufactured. I still say showing up at your legislature and testifying before these committees and being there, you know, warm-blooded person in front of these so-called leaders to let them know how you feel is always the best way to do it. But sometimes people can't do that. What's the best thing to do, Ron? Phone calls? Is it start a group in your area? Is it start petitions? I mean, go be a court watcher. I mean, what would you give the average person, you know, if they that doesn't have a lot of time, but they want to put a couple, 2-3 hours a week in, let's say, towards the cause of liberty? What would you suggest for them to do, and what direction should they head in?
Boy, Jim, that is a very, very, very good question. And that is the fact that the most effective method to do what we're talking about doing is a form of a letter. A letter is considered to be prima facie evidence. In other words, if you do it electronically, then they can just hit a button and it disappears. But you send the letter, comes what's called a matter of record. And that, and I forget the exact number, but every letter that the public sends in or for or against something or a complaint represents, I think it's about 156 people or 153 people, whatever the number was, and I don't recall. Now you get 50 people writing a letter. Now they start taking notice, simply because you talk to your neighbor, you talk to family member, and pretty soon comes voting time, and they're scared to death that all of these letters there, because then you can go in a public records request and get copies back out of that record, and your letter better be there. Because if it don't, now they've committed a federal felony offense under Title 18, Section 241 and 242, deprivation of rights under color of law. So a letter is a bit...
A certified letter? You sent it?
Absolutely. Okay. Yes, sir. Certified return receipt. And when you get that receipt back, boy, you hang on to that. Put it in your file or whatever. But a letter is a powerful thing. Very powerful.
Well, Ron, we're just out of time here. I'm going to give out your websites again or your information one more time. If you want to get in touch with constitutional lawyer Ron Gibson, if you're interested in land patent stuff or other legal matters, you can email him at DRITECRG@hotmail.com. That's DRITECRG@hotmail.com. Or you can reach Ron by phone by dialing 541-621-5548, 541-621-5548. Ron Gibson, we got the gal coming up here telling us 90 seconds to go here just in a second. But we do appreciate you being here on the show with us today again, as always. And we always appreciate your great information. I look forward to having you back again soon.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
You're quite welcome. Anything you'd like to say in closing before we go? 30 seconds.
No, I'm just asking the people to get involved, whatever you can. You don't have to know it all. You don't have to do it all. But do what you can. Because if you don't, folks, they're coming and going to take it away from you. It's that simple. Thank you all.
All right. Wise words, Ron. Thanks so much for being here. It was Ron Gibson. We appreciate him being on the show, and we're just out of time here today, folks. If you want to support this show, go to MontanaGazetteRadio.com, MontanaGazetteRadio.com, where you can listen to the show live now on that page, and you can always support us on our flagship, NorthwestLibertyNews.com. Till next time, this is James White for Montana Gazette Radio. Thank you, my guest, Ron Gibson, saying bye now.